Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here. What happened? Last week, we both were on the optimistic side, predicting two wins, and that's what we got, but I think we got a lot more than we hoped for.
Holy cow, optimistic Phil is just sitting there going, I told you it was going to be good. Those were some very enjoyable games.
We're going to dive into those in today's podcast, talk about what went so right and can it keep going right as maybe the page turns into a bit of a gauntlet for your Marquette Golden Eagles, and we'll look ahead to the games this week and maybe look a little bit down the road and maybe talk about some guys who are breaking out lately. But Phil, let's just talk about these two games. For all the anxiety a week ago, you know, and the fact that what I believe is Marquette's first 0-3 start in Big East history and first 0-3 start in any conference in quite a while. They flip that around and turn in what, at least if you're talking about margin of victory, is the best week Marquette has had in the Big East. Now, they've had better wins as far as quality opponents back-to-back games in the Big East, but as far as margin of victory, Marquette has never beaten two Big East teams back-to-back games by 25 points or more, and that's exactly what they did this week, a 32-point win over Providence, one of Marquette's biggest margins of victory ever in the Big East.
I think it was the biggest ever.
There was a 34-point win over Cincinnati back in like 2008 or 2009. That was it. That's the only.
Oh, you know what I was thinking of is it was the largest victory over a ranked opponent.
Okay,
Marquette
there you go.
Has ever had.
Yeah, there you go. And then a 28-point win over Georgetown. Phil, again, we both predicted wins. We both thought Georgetown was pretty bad, and they were. And we both thought Providence was overvalued a little bit. And they were. But what went so right this week for Marquette?
Well, I think the defense played at darn near elite levels, and the offense came with it, right? Like, I think what made this week special was, again, I think the quality of the opponents turned out to be easier than the team had been playing of late. So, you know, Marquette as a good team played well against average teams, right? Whereas opposed, they were playing okay against great teams. But I think it was really the fact that both the offense and defense kind of clicked simultaneously. I think up to this season, or up to the point of the Providence game, I think it was kind of a you take it, no, you take it, kind of between the offense and the defense. When the offense was clicking, the defense was a little lackadaisical. When the defense was clicking, the offense couldn't hit, you know, water if it fell out of a boat. And I think this was the first game and really first two games where both sides of the ball were kind of on point nearly the entire game.
Yeah, I mean, it could just be as simple as Marquette lost to good teams and the schedule softened up a little bit and they won games. But I think to come out with the energy that they did in the Providence game and then carry it over into the Georgetown game was so impressive to me.
Right.
That this team could have maybe sulked a little bit and stewed over that Creighton loss for a few more games and maybe played frustrated and just not had any energy in that Tuesday game against Providence, but that's not what happened at all. They were focused. They had great effort defensively. The offense, like I said, was clicking for just about the entire game, and they carried that over into Georgetown on Friday. And one guy I think we have to highlight is Olivier Maxence Prosper, who early on in the year, I think many of us weren't sure exactly what his role was and if he had a great fit with the team in the rotation. But I think he has really kind of settled into a really nice role, Phil. The absence of Cam Jones due to COVID allowed him to get a chance to start again, and I'm not sure he's given that spot back. I think he's being selective with his shots and taking good outside shots, and also just he's been strong on the boards and attacking the basket, and he's turning into a really valuable piece for this team.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I remember we did an entire segment on, all right, what would we do to change up the lineup? It was around either the UCLA or Xavier game where we said, all right, what lineup change would we make? And I think we universally looked at it and said, you know, Omax is where we need to get better production. Whatever his role is, we need to tweak it and change it up. And of course, the coaching staff, being infinitely smarter than us, did that to a certain extent, but then knew when to reinsert him, you know, and when to bring him back. If you look at his last four games, you know, when from his season low of 9 minutes against Xavier, he then played 30 against Connecticut, 33 against Creighton, 26 against Providence, and 28 against Georgetown. So it was almost a little bit like a message was sent and a message was received, right? The coaching staff, you know, kind of took him out a little bit and said, hey, look, let's really rethink how we're using you. And I think his shot selection is probably the biggest difference in the last four games compared to the balance of the season. Like, I just think he's playing a little bit more in control, and he's selecting shots he knows he can hit. He's not forcing the shots like I think he was earlier in the season.
Yeah, since that Xavier game where he only got 9 minutes, he's actually 5 of 8 from three. So he's really only taken threes when he's got a wide open look. Otherwise, he's been a guy in the paint, and that's one reason why we always assumed he was playing as much as he was, is because he has good size and he can help a team that overall is not a very good rebounding team. So obviously, you've always got either Oso or Kerr in the middle, but you need another rebound, and you've got Justin out there, but you need a third rebounder sometimes, and Omax provides that as the second forward, the other forward next to Justin. So he's always had that good presence in the front court, but the scoring ability wasn't there early, but it's starting to come around a little bit. He's just settling into his role on this team, and he's kind of turning into an invaluable piece, because when he's contributing the way he has, Marquette has just steamrolled two teams here. And I'm excited to see what he can continue to do going forward. And, you know, another guy who continues to produce, maybe even at a better level than what the analytics suggest, is Tyler Kolick. And I think we've kind of been over Kolick a few times, Phil, and how his shooting from three probably brings down his overall ratings in the advanced metrics, but anybody who watches him play knows that this offense depends on him driving and creating for other people. Whether he's getting an assist or he makes the pass that sets up the pass to get the bucket. And he did that plenty against both Providence and especially Georgetown. Kolick was knifing through Georgetown's defense ridiculously easily.
At will.
And that made things so tough for Georgetown. So another outstanding game for Kolick. And three-point shooting aside, he's really just the engine that makes this offense go.
Well, and I think, you know, the focusing on the three-point shooting a little bit, I think some of the analytics will say, and some of this is in the chat group, some of this is on Twitter, and we're starting to see a little bit of also, similar to Omax, a better shot selection out of Kolick. He went 1 for 2 against Georgetown, 1 for 3 from Providence, which, you know, you're fine with, right? That's, you know, roughly 35%, which is all you really need out of him. You need him to be just enough of a threat that it opens up or at least forces teams to guard him on the perimeter. And I think if he can take more set threes as opposed to dribbling into threes, I think that's going to make a world of difference. I think the problem is that he is dribbling the ball so much, because that is just his style, that the majority of his threes come, you know, off the dribble, because he's always on the move looking for that pass. So that'll be interesting to see how his 3-point shooting evolves. But like, his assisting is just like, There are passes he makes that I have no idea. I have to rewind the game, and I'm like, how did you even see that? Like, how did you know there was a player there? It's some of it, I think, is great vision, and some of it is just like his brain works so fast and knows exactly where the players are supposed to be. And credit to the rest of the team, they are where they're supposed to be. I think we're really starting to see the team as a whole kind of gel and if you will, trust in each other to be where they need to be, trust that the other players will be where they be. And I think we're starting to see that pay off in spades with the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. He was 6 of 7 from the field in the Georgetown game, and I think he is being selective with his 3-point shooting a little bit more lately, and he was highly efficient in that Georgetown game, an offensive rating of 140 and 154 in the game before that against Providence. So terrific, and I think it just speaks to just kind of what you were saying there, just knowing the offense, practice, film study, and just trusting that your guys are going to be where they're supposed to be. And in these last two games, everybody was where they were supposed to be. It just clicked perfectly. Is there any element to the last week, Phil, that you may take with a grain of salt considering the competition, especially the Georgetown game?
Well, I do think, I mean, Omax has certainly played better, and this seems a little counterintuitive since we just were enthusiastic, but I think it's a tale of like two extremes, right? He wasn't as bad as the 9 minutes against Xavier or some of the other games earlier in the season. I also don't think he's quite as good as the Georgetown and Providence results, at least not yet. We'll see. I mean, he very well may go for an offensive rating of 160 against DePaul for all I know, but that's also kind of a quality opponent issue as well. But I think the offense, I'm not ready to say it's totally unlocked. It's certainly encouraging how it's improved over the last couple of games. But until I see this offense compete at this kind of efficiency against a high quality team like a Villanova or a Seton Hall or a Xavier again, right? Until we see it against those teams, I'm not going to be convinced that the offense is quote unquote totally fixed.
Right, and I think that's fair to say because I'm not going to do is really downgrade the Providence game because Providence, that's a good opponent. While 16 Reeves maybe was a little high for them. Providence maybe got the nosebleed factor, as I like to call it. I mean, you get too high in the altitude, maybe you can deal with nosebleeds. Providence was good, but 16 in the country, that's a little up there for Providence. They were probably due for a fall, and I think that's kind of what happened with Providence. They got about as high as they were probably going to get. I don't think we were ready to talk about national top 10 team Providence just yet.
Right. And it also helped that A.J. Reeves wasn't available for that game.
Yes.
Right.
That certainly needs to be said, but that's a quality win to just not just beat Providence, but to destroy Providence and just leave doubt in that game.
Well, the other thing that I think overall it's encouraging. I understand the pessimist side of things might call it out differently, but like with both the Providence and the Georgetown games, there were runs that both Providence and Georgetown went on that really cut down first half leads that, Marquette responded with, significant, we saw it in the Creighton game as well, right? Like Creighton early in the second half went up, 17 after hitting three corner threes in a row. Marquette fought back. Providence got the game down to, I think, a single possession late in the first half. And then, Shaka took a fortuitous timeout, and next thing you know, Marquette uncorked a 20-0 run going into halftime. Similar thing happened to Georgetown. Georgetown got it to a 3-point lead, and then next thing you know, I think it was in the second half, Georgetown got it to 3 with 16 minutes left, and then Marquette went on something like a 34-6 run or something insane like that. So the fact that this team is not only scoring but is just shutting down opponents on the defensive end, I think it does give reason for hope that this is a sustainable outcome, because it's not just, hey, we got really hot from three and we threw a bunch of buckets in and that's how we built the lead. It was, the opponent scored no points or 2 points or, 6 points across a 5 to 10 minute span, which is a sustainable practice. So that's the hope I have is as the competition gets tougher, that this team will still be able to lean on that defense as they have the last couple of games.
Yeah, I think it's good for their confidence that they were able to withstand runs at both those games, particularly in the Georgetown game. It was a road game. Now, not exactly a raucous crowd there in D.C., right. But the fact is it was a road game, and the home team made like an 11-0 run to really chip it down in the half. And like I said, they probably got him with a possession of two there in the second half. But then to just drop the hammer on him and just totally take all of the air out of the building was impressive. And you certainly hope it carries into the next game against DePaul, because that's one, yeah, you got to have that one if you want to start looking forward to what's coming up after that, which is going to be quite daunting, and we're going to get to that in just a bit. But you've got to think another home game coming up this week against DePaul. The confidence is there, and this is definitely the quintessential don't lose to DePaul game.
Yeah, but I will say this: I think it was the other thing that needs to be said is the back to back wins in such convincing style. I think, at least for me personally, I think purges a little bit of the Wojo era, right? Like the big win against Providence certainly could have happened in the Wojo era, but I guarantee you we would have laid a duck against laid an egg against Georgetown immediately following, right?
Like, that's what we got used to so much over the last few years was, yeah, we got big wins, but then just you enjoy it for exactly like 3 or 4 days, and then right. You're frustrated again. Being able to parlay success is going to be something that you're going to need to do if you're ever going to build a program, to get a big win and then parlay that with another nice win and then another one and then get 5 out of 6 and then get 7 out of 8. And then all of a sudden you're in great position in the conference. Wojo's teams were never able to do that. And that's what was so frustrating about that. But yeah, like, now granted, there's nothing, you're not going to hang a banner because you beat Georgetown, and nor will you do that if you beat DePaul. But if you want to stay relevant, this team, stay relevant in the postseason picture, these games are games you need to win. Georgetown on the road, not a good team. You got to beat them. DePaul at home, you got to beat them. Because then you turn the page and look what's coming up beginning on Saturday. 7 straight games against teams that are currently ranked. It's going to be quite a haul there for your Golden Eagles. But I can't say enough good things about where Marquette is now, because if you look at the metrics on KenPom, those numbers are getting to be pretty nice. We talked before the season, Phil, our own Rob Lowe over there at Crack Sidewalks has been saying top 40 defense or bust. Right now they're 43 as we're recording this on KenPom.
Right.
So they're right there in the mix. Shaka Smart, ever since his third year at VCU, has had a top 40 defense every single year. As we sit here tonight, it is 43. In the country. Offense is in the top 100. It's 78 right now. Their ranks in the Big East at the moment, quite good. Number one, according to KenPom, number one most efficient defense, number three offensive efficiency, number one effective field goal percentage on both offense and defense, number one 2-point percentage defense, number two 2-point percentage offense, number three 3-point percentage offense. How about that? And number three 3-point percentage defense. Number one in blocks, that's number one in blocks, or avoiding blocks on offense, and number two overall in blocks on defense. So a lot of what we call the green numbers there, and it's really the important ones, because effective field goal percentage is the king of all metrics on KenPom, and so far so good in conference play. Despite the fact that Marquette is 2-3 overall, the metrics in Big East play are quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, I think some of it comes down to schedule. It would have been interesting had we played St. John's before that Creighton game. I would make the argument that I think, well, we'll see. We have to, well, unless there's another COVID pause, we'll play St. John's. But I think Marquette would have won. I don't view St. John's any different than say Providence or Georgetown, right, in terms of their beatability, right? So, like, you got to wonder, I think momentum is actually absolutely a thing. And, and for whatever reason, Marquette pivoted off of that close loss to Creighton and turned it into some momentum against Providence and Georgetown that, in theory, should continue with DePaul. And then you see where it goes from there in terms of that hellish 7-game stretch. But I think the big thing is these are games we absolutely have to win. Sure, you don't have to win them by 30 points. Stop it. They're already dead, but I'll take it. But these are, you have to beat DePaul. We have banked enough goodwill, if you will, over you know, top tier teams, that as long as you beat the middle and the bottom of the Big East, you're going to be in a position for Team Bubble Watch, which is really all we really need.
Yeah, they're going to be right there. If they can be close to 500, like below 500, I don't know if it's going to get in. It's hard for me to say right now because I definitely don't do the whole bracketology thing for a living. I just copy what everybody else says. But below 500, like if it's 9, if they play every game, that would be 9 and 11. I don't know if that'll be enough. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But yeah, it's tough to say if that St. John's game is going to get made up or not, because if you look at the schedules for both teams, I'm not sure I see an obvious window for both teams right to figure out a way to play that. But again, there could be another COVID pause where one team or another loses a game and all of a sudden it's doable. So who knows? And one thing I did throw out in our little Twitter space with Patrick Leary and the Anonymous Eagle guys after the game is hypothetically Tuesday before the Big East tournament a last-ditch option? Because the game obviously would be in New York, right?
Right.
So if you're already in New York for the Big East tournament, you can all just go ahead and stay in the hotel that you're staying at for the Big East tournament, maybe get there a day earlier, maybe even play the game in the afternoon if you want to give teams an extra half day's rest before they start playing, because odds are one or both of those teams will be playing on Wednesday. Maybe that's an option as a last ditch if you're not able to figure it out during the regular season, because I'm sure ideally neither team would want to have an extra game the week of the Big East tournament, but if you have to do it, and you want to do it, maybe that's the last ditch option. But we'll see. Because as of now, yeah, Marquette would only be slated to play 19 regular season Big East games.
Yeah, and unless there's some sort of mandate that says you have to make up games, that you know what I mean? Like, hey, you're going to be penalized if you don't do everything to make up games. Quite frankly, Marquette's probably incentivized not to play that St. John's game, right?
Right.
You know, because right now St. John's is just kind of high risk, low reward, right? Yeah, if you beat them, even if you beat them big, okay, great. You beat them like you should. But you are taking on the risk of a bad loss, right? If you lose, I guess St. John's, if they stay in the top 100 in the net on a road loss, that would still be a Q2 loss. Maybe a Q3 loss. I'm trying to remember, but anyway, it wouldn't be like a horrendous loss, but it doesn't help you any to take that risk. So I'd be surprised if the St. John's game, especially if Marquette is on the bubble, I'd be surprised if that St. John's game gets made up. There's just no reason for Marquette to want to do that.
Yeah, maybe there's just no urgency, especially on Marquette's side, to do it. So we'll see if that happens or not. But the thing is, we'll see if any of these games happen. It seems like that's fading a little bit. Games getting canceled, maybe, knock on wood. Hopefully it continues to trend in the downward direction, the amount of canceled games. But as it is, Marquette has two games scheduled this week. The first game being Tuesday, January 11th, 6 p.m. Central Time at the Fiserv Forum. You can see it on Fox Sports 1. It is Marquette, and it is the DePaul Blue Demons. I don't remember exactly where Don't Lose to DePaul started, but I want to say we had at least a hand in that becoming a thing. Like, I don't remember it.
Yes.
Like, I don't remember the first person to start the hashtag or whatever. Like, the Marquette Nation guys, I think, probably had a big hand in that being a thing, but Don't Lose to DePaul has been around for a while.
Well, I think I don't want to take attribution for something that, you know, just kind of sprang up naturally, but I definitely recall closing podcasts with whatever you do, just don't lose to DePaul.
Right.
and I know I certainly didn't start the hashtag because, you know, that's not my jive. But yeah, it's been around for a while. And the DePaul matchups, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, at least since the Crean era, the DePaul matchups have been funky. Like, just weird things happen against DePaul.
And DePaul tends to get up for Marquette. There's a somewhat of a rivalry aspect to it, just because the two schools are so close geographically. And I think DePaul does get a kick out of beating Marquette. I mean, Wojo kept Dave Lato employed for probably a couple extra years because he kept losing to him. But, you know, it's a new era at DePaul. They are, they're still at the bottom of the Big East. I mean, they're not embarrassing, but they're not great either. They're off to an 0-4 start in the Big East. They hung around with Villanova for a half on Saturday before Villanova pulled away and won that game. They've also lost to St. John's. They got blown out by Providence. They lost by 4 at Butler. Their most notable win on the season was probably getting Chris Mack on the hot seat in Louisville. They went to Louisville and beat the Cardinals. But as it is, you know, KenPom has this game as an 8-point spread in Marquette's favor. Javon Freeman Liberty is DePaul's best player, who I think he – how many teams has he been on? I want to say he's been with a few.
I want to say 5.
Am I confusing him with somebody else? No.
No, 2. He was at Valpo.
Yeah, he was at Valpo. I'm confusing him with Coleman Lands, who was at DePaul and who's now at Kansas or somewhere else. But, yeah, but Freeman Liberty is probably their top guy. Jalen Terry is a pretty nice player for them who comes off the bench. I guess he starts at point guard. So he was at Arizona, if I remember correctly. Jalen Terry was. Oregon, that's what I knew. He was in the Pac-12. But, again, this is a game you got to win, Phil.
Yes.
I mean, you respect DePaul because they've beaten you so many times. And I want to say Marquette rarely, if ever, makes the tournament in seasons they lose to DePaul. That's why don't lose to DePaul has really become a thing. It tends to be a season ender sometimes. Now, this one is too early to be a true season ender, as it has been in the past. But this would be a gut punch to lose this game at home. And so
it would certainly be a giveaway to the momentum built over the last couple of games.
Right, yeah, you lose that goodwill. So this is another taking care of business kind of game. Just bring DePaul in. Beat the heck out of them. It'd be nice if you can win another 25-plus point game, but we're not going to set the bar that high. Just freaking win. Don't lose to DePaul.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, again, I want to give respect to DePaul in terms of, hey, they're rebuild. You know, they're in year one of a new coach, right? They're rebuilding. You know, the Dave Leto era. Either one of them went particularly well, and so DePaul has some work to do, right? Do they have pieces? Do they have the potential to jump up and grab you? Yeah, absolutely, right? So you gotta take, you know, I kind of hope, you know, Shaka made everyone do wind sprints after the Georgetown game and just said, hey, look, we, you know, refocus. We're not as good as we think we are. We got to do better. You know, let's prove it against DePaul type of thing. So do I think we can lose to DePaul? Sure. That's always in the back of the mind, given how weird things are. But this is absolute of the three games, you know, Providence, Georgetown, and DePaul. I was pretty confident in the Georgetown and Providence games. I'm extremely confident in the DePaul game, notwithstanding the, you know, weird stuff. Because it's just DePaul doesn't match up particularly well against us. It's a game at home. It'll be interesting to see how the crowd is being a 6 p.m. game. I know I'm bringing the family to that game, so you know there'll be a couple of crazy kids screaming in the background. So it'll be interesting to see how the team responds after, you know, a week of, you know, really great performance. Can they keep their role going?
Yeah, I'll say this: it is almost kind of the perfect valley spot.
Yeah,
to play DePaul.
Looking like if you're DePaul,
if you're DePaul, this is when you want to play Marquette, right? Like, surely they can't win 3 games in a row by 20 plus points, so they've got to come back down to earth. It's in some regard, and then they've got this daunting stretch ahead of them. So if you're DePaul, you're looking at Marquette thinking they may be looking past us, and like they may be looking ahead to the next ones because Siri's talking to me. I don't know what that was.
She's saying don't lose to DePaul either.
Yeah, that's exactly what she said. Don't lose to DePaul. But yeah, so if you're DePaul, this is probably exactly the time you want to play Marquette is the point I'm trying to make. So that's the only thing that makes me nervous is that it is kind of a valley game, the type of spot it is.
I agree, but I also – this is one of those times where I uncork the – like I in Shaka we trust – right? Like, I think he's building the right culture. He's been there. He, you know, I think he's got a pulse for what's going on. And frankly, you know, yeah, you can point at the UCLA game where, you know, Marquette was kind of boat raced a little bit. Same with the St. Bonaventure game. But Marquette has been competitive in every tough game. I find it hard to believe that they would, you know, against a team that they are clearly more talented than, at least this year. I just find it hard to believe that Marquette would look past DePaul too much. Now, they may start slow, or, you know, shots may not be falling for Marquette or something like that. But I really find it hard to believe that at this point in the season, with the culture Shaka is building, that this team, you know, kind of doesn't perform the way it needs to go out and beat a mediocre to below average DePaul team.
And Shaka's teams are always going to be built on defense, and that's one thing we've said a few times, is good defense is probably more repeatable than good offense.
Right.
Because you can bring that intensity every night. Maybe some nights the shots don't fall, or some nights you're just not getting the fouls called on the offensive end that you would like. But I think good defense is a little more repeatable, and with the rotation of Oso and Kerr in the middle, and I think the effort that you're going to get from guys like Marcel and Kolek defensively, and then the presence of Omax as it continues. Ben in the anonymous Eagle chat pointed out, like, Omax is now kind of, he's at the top of that, of the full court press, and that seems right. to be a good, seems to be a better spot for him, and maybe the press isn't as falling apart once it gets settled into the half court as maybe it had been in the past, because maybe the guards are a little further back, and so they get in position a little sooner to guard in the half court, and then Omax maybe gets in position on his guy and catches up, and once the full court gets into the half court, it seems to be working better. So
right.
I think the defense has found its groove, is trying what I'm trying to say, and that's why I am, like you, I am pretty, I dare say, quite optimistic that they will take care of business against DePaul. It'll start with defense, which is why I'm putting take my money on the old reliable 32 deflections.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting because DePaul, you know, not the pace Marquette likes to, but DePaul likes to play fast. So I think this will be a lot of possessions. You know, DePaul does fairly well about protecting the ball on offense, and you know, so I think you know, I don't know that, you know, Marquette's going to turn DePaul over a lot, but if Marquette can avoid fouling and just keep playing well, you know, I think the big difference for Marquette is the effective field goal percentage, you know, so forcing players into non-standard shots and hoping they miss those as opposed to letting them get comfortable. And I think, you know, with DePaul in a road game, I think that's the recipe for success. I think it'll be a good game for Marquette. I will say this, I'm going to sound like a broken record again. I really hope Marquette can like force some contact in the lane more this game. Like they are just not generating enough fouls on the other team, and they really, I think that's going to be one of those things, one of these games, that's going to really hurt Marquette, because they are just not getting enough close in looks where they're, you know, and I don't think it has anything to do with officials swallowing whistles or whatever. I just don't think Marquette is thinking about generating fouls, and I think that's a gap on their part. But we'll see.
Yeah. Haven't really had to the last two games, but when a game
that's true,
when it gets close to crunch time, you want to be in the bonus. And no, your point is well taken. And I don't know if you'll need that Tuesday or not, but maybe you will need it on Friday or on Saturday, I should say. That's the beginning of the gauntlet, Phil, as we kind of look ahead. You know, I don't want to talk about the entire gauntlet, but the fact is, seven games after the DePaul game. So you take care of business against DePaul, hopefully. Then you've got home against Seton Hall, at Villanova, home against Xavier, at Seton Hall, at Providence, home against Nova, at UConn. All expected losses per KenPom. Now, some closer than others. Like, for right now, the game against Seton Hall on Saturday, that's only a one-point spread in Seton Hall's favor, according to KenPom, as is the home game against Xavier on Sunday the 23rd. That's just a one-point spread in Xavier's favor. So it's not like KenPom is expecting Marquette to get blown out in any of these games, really. The only one that really is lopsided would be at Nova on Wednesday the 19th, the retiring Josh Hart's jersey that day, by the way. So that'll probably be a pretty tough environment to go in and win. But Marquette expected to be in them, but not favored. So looking at that seven-game stretch, Phil, what is realistic? What are you hopeful for as we kind of look towards this stretch that really is going to make or break Marquette's season as far as any hopes of making the tournament? Because you got to do some damage there.
Right, right. Well, and that's where you show your mettle, right? Like those seven games, with the exception of Providence, are all top. I mean, by the time the games are played, they might be top 25 teams across the board from a KenPom standpoint. So that's where you're going to really make the difference on Team Bubble Watch. Now, having said that, I don't even know, again, with what Marquette has banked in the non-conference and some of the other wins that are up for grabs later in the season, like, say a Creighton on the road, etc. I don't think you have to do better than 3-4 to, like, again, put yourselves in the conversation. If you go over 500 in those seven games, I think you're absolutely Team Bubble Watch. But if you
I think if you're over 500 in those seven, I think you're in. Like, I think you would think. I think 2-5. Now, granted, you've got to finish strong if you go 1-6 or 2-5. But if you get one or two wins, I think you're in the conversation. I think you go 2-5. Granted, you have to make up ground in those last six or seven games, depending if there's a St. John's game tacked on to the end. But so you got to make up some ground at the end. But I think 3-4 or better, I think you are dancing in the streets if you're Marquette, because I think you would be comfortably. I would think comfortably in on bracket projections at that point in the season. I think you'd be in great shape. I think
I kind of think you're there. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think the one thing I'm doing is I'm discounting Providence. Like, Providence is a 50th in KenPom right now. I think they're exposed a little bit. I think I think they had some advantageous games against top teams that were without key players due to COVID. Not that Providence is like a terrible team, but I also don't think they're a top 50 KenPom team. So I kind of bake in a win against Providence in that, you know, 3-4. So I really, if you take Villanova out, I guess what I'm saying is a 2-4 in the six remaining games against top 25 essentially teams. Like, that gets you in the conversation for the bubble.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'll get you right there. So, because the thing is, you just got to get this game against DePaul taken care of, and then if you do that, you just hope that the momentum keeps going and the team just keeps improving. And I think if they do that, they're going to pick off one of these teams. I don't know who they're going to pick off, but I think there's got to be one. There's got to be one that they could pick off, and I'm hopeful one of them is Seton Hall, because you could get yourself off to a great start if you take care of business at home against Seton Hall, which is essentially a toss-up game, because then your margin for error grows a little bit, right? You've got a little bit of pad if you can, because if you get that first one, then all of a sudden it's like the confidence just continues to build. Like, oh, okay, we could do this, right? We can play with the big guys.
Right. Well, and especially with that Nova road game looming, right? Like, you know, could Marquette beat Nova at home? Sure, could. Seems unlikely, highly unlikely from my perspective, just from style of play and a little bit of the talent disparity. But, you know, so you kind of want to, again, you want to bank that Seton Hall win and feel good, so that if you have a reversal against Villanova, that you're not going, oh man, I'm 0-2. I need to win at least two out of the next five or three out of the next five and really start pressing, right? You really want to get off to a strong start. And maybe they don't think about it in these terms, but I think that Seton Hall game is a really critical, since it is a home game. Seton Hall's is coming in hot. They are, you know, admittedly, Kevin Willard is my least favorite coach in all of the Big East, so I want nothing more than to watch him lose at home on Saturday. But, it is a very important win to really kind of start that stretch of mid to late January through, you know, the beginning of February to really cement the opportunity down, you know, for Team Bubble Watch. Because, again, the season finishes pretty easy for all intents and purposes, right?
Like, yeah, when you play seven ranked teams, it's going to lighten up a little towards the end, because KenPom has Marquette winning five of its last six. So there are opportunities to make up some ground if Marquette stumbles over the next 3-4 weeks. So yeah, there are opportunities to get some wins on the back end. You just like to get a few in this tough stretch to maybe get yourself in the conversation, because, you know, as of now, I wouldn't say the tournament is likely. I wouldn't say it's likely, but it's certainly possible, because there's just so many games left to play and so many opportunities for quality wins in the Big East over the next couple months.
Absolutely.
So let's see. Seton Hall, you know, looking at some of their metrics coming into the game on Saturday. By the way, that's Saturday the 15th. That's 11 a.m. Blah. Love that. Or dislike that. Fiserv Forum, that game's on FS1. So again, Seton Hall, they're tough. Look, you know, they're a top 25 team on KenPom. They're 33rd defense in the country, 33rd offense in the country, 26th defense in the country. Their effective field goal percentage on offense isn't quite that great, though. They're only 202nd in the country on effective field goal percentage on offense, but their effective field goal percentage defense is outstanding, 26th in the country to match their ranking of their defense. So you're going to get a great defensive effort from the Pirates. So that game will probably be a bit more of a rock fight than some of the games Marquette has been involved in lately. If you're going to take down Seton Hall, what do you got to do, Phil? They don't shoot the three particularly well. They're a team that looks like they're just probably just going to bully you a little bit and try to get in the paint and also make it difficult for you to get to the paint on the other end.
Yeah, I think it's really going to come down to, how well Marquette is going to, like, how well Marquette does around shot selection, right? Like, I think Seton Hall is going to try and limit the shots that Marquette takes, which, you know, I mean, maybe that's a duh, but they're really stingy, especially around the two-point part of the court. So, you know, and Marquette has decidedly over the last four or five games shied away from the 3-point shot. I think they've kind of realized, hey, we're not great at that. And so they are getting more 2-point shots. So the question is, will Marquette continue to be deliberate in its 2-point shot selection, getting to the hoop, getting to the paint where they can get more shots, because that's where Seton Hall really tries to deny is those paint touches. And that's been Marquette's strength over the last, you know, really four games. So that's going to be the deciding factor is who wins the competition of wills there, who gets into the lane and who doesn't. That's my junior analysis anyway.
There, and hopefully it's a raucous crowd there for a Saturday game. I know 11 a.m.
Well, if they beat DePaul coming in off a three game winning streak, a top 25 opponent coming in, you would think that's going to get some attention around town.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know how many teams in the Big East you consider to be a quote unquote rival of Marquette, but Seton Hall's getting there. I mean, I think I think a lot of us get a pretty good boil going when Seton Hall games come around. So, again, is it a true rivalry? Probably not. I mean, I don't think Seton Hall would consider us much of a rival just because they still identify with probably the old Big East as much as anybody does. But I feel like there's some mutual hatred there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could I'm not saying it is a Louisville level rivalry now, but I could certainly see it blossoming into something like that.
Yeah, the Powell versus Howard days were kind of the peak of it, right? There was just so much animosity.
Well, that Big East tournament game when Miles Powell should have been technicaled out of the game, and turns out he wasn't, and then he was back in. Yeah, that was peak. Those guys suck.
Still not over that. That one still burns a little bit. So for that reason and many others, you would love to beat Seton Hall, because the thing is, if you do that, and again, assuming you could take care of business against DePaul, that's four straight wins, two overranked opponents. That would create a bit of a buzz nationally, I think, for Marquette too. Not that we need necessarily national attention, although you love it when you get it, right? But when the national podcasts or the national writers for ESPN or The Athletic decide they want to do something on what's going on at Marquette, you kind of enjoy it, right? Because, you know, there are 350-something teams in the country. You know they're not going to write about you all the time. They're going to focus on the big boys, and you get that. But I think the win over Providence did raise a few eyebrows nationally, like, oh, well, that was something. But then if you do that twice over a span of, you know, 13, 14 days, then people say, oh, maybe Shaka's got something going on there in Milwaukee. So that's just something to keep an eye out for. We'll see if it gets that far. But I do think they take care of business against DePaul. I dare say I'm always nervous just because it is DePaul, but that's a game you should win. I feel like they're going to be focused for it. I'd be very disappointed in a letdown in that situation. Seton Hall, I got to say, the pieces are in place to get that done, I think. You know, because I think, considering it's at home and Marquette's playing well, if they come in with a little momentum and confidence, I don't know if I want to predict a win, Phil, but I think they're going to give it a hell of an effort in against Seton Hall on Saturday. How do you feel about the result against Seton Hall?
I mean, I'm not going to predict a win. I do think... I would lock up the DePaul game. I hate doing that because, again, DePaul's weird. You know, that feels like a jinx. I get that. But, like, again, different era. We need to shake it off and believe. That Seton Hall game, I know this. Marquette's going to be competitive, right? Marquette has been, again, with the only exception really being St. Bonaventure. The first 10 minutes of UCLA got away from them, but they were, you know, they had opportunities to get, you know, to get that game down to a 2-possession game. So, you know, Marquette has been in, even the losses has been in every game. I mean, Xavier, who I think is probably a better quality opponent than Seton Hall. And certainly Connecticut is as well. Marquette was within one possession with a minute or less, or excuse me, 2 minutes or less to go. So Marquette has it in them. It's a home game. I think coming off the confidence of what would presumably be a 3-game winning streak, I think they have the ability to get it done. If I was forced to pick, I think Marquette beats Seton Hall, but I think it's going to be a damn close game, and I think it's going to be a good game, quite honestly.
Yeah, I'm expecting another good game. Another game that leaves the kind of tensions you love to have between both teams. Just a little bit of animosity, maybe some bitter post-game press conference quotes from one coach or another. Those are the kind of things I enjoy sometimes. Just a little bit of hatred. I'm hoping the game Saturday just adds a little spice to the Marquette
season. I really enjoy it, especially since I would love that, especially since they have to play again 11 days later. I think anything to get the competitive juices flowing would be great. I mean, because Seton Hall is, like, really the only team in the conference where, at least I personally feel that, right? Like, Nova, I mean, one, they're just a better program than us right now. But two, like, I like Jay Wright. Like,
Villanova, right? Yeah, like, I respect them. And two, it's like you're thankful for Villanova for carrying this freaking league for the first 10 years. Like, they're the only team that really ever does anything in March. You hate to say that, but that's the truth out of the Big East. So, like, you're thankful for Villanova for being in this league, and you just respect the hell out of the program. So while you love beating Villanova, it's not like a hate thing. It's not like you don't hate Villanova. Like, at least I don't. I don't know many Marquette fans do.
I respect their fans. They've got classy fans, right? Like, I feel Seton Hall and Creighton are the two programs where I'm like, God, I just don't like talking to those people.
And the funny thing is, granted, Villanova isn't necessarily in Philadelphia proper, but when you think of Philadelphia sports fans, you think of some of the absolute worst.
Right.
Like just the most miserable fans you could run. And I say this lovingly because I have a lot of family in Philadelphia, but even they would agree with me.
Say,
even they would agree, say, yeah, we got some miserable freaking fans here. That just doesn't come across in the Villanova fan base. Again, maybe because it's not necessarily in the city. It's not like Philadelphia proper, but maybe that's why their fans come across that way. But I agree with you. Like, I don't remember many Villanova Marquette games ending in much animosity. Like, when Marquette had that big win over number one Villanova, Jay Wright immediately went on Twitter and said, hey, congratulations to Coach Wojciechowski and the Marquette fans. Great win, great atmosphere. We love stuff like this in the Big East. It's like, respect you, Jay. Appreciate it.
Right.
Come back again and lose again sometime. Come back and get beat again.
You're welcome to come here anytime.
Anytime you want to come back and lose, you're welcome to.
But yeah, Seton Hall just rubs me the wrong way, both from a Kevin Willard standpoint and from a fan base standpoint. And I will say, you know, Creighton's a bit down the road, but Creighton fans, like, I have never been so mad after games, unless it was a Wisconsin game, as I was anytime Creighton comes to town. Like, their fans, maybe it's just the ones that can afford to travel to Milwaukee, but whoo boy, do I not want to spend any time with those guys.
Yeah, I've heard that too. The thing is, I have not had that experience with Creighton fans because I don't think I've ever actually been to a Creighton Marquette game myself. So I haven't really had that. I actually lived in Omaha for 1 year in high school. I actually went to Creighton Prep, the high school associated with Creighton University. But I've never been to a Creighton Marquette game at all. But so I haven't had those negative experiences that you have. I will say another fan base that it's still they're going to get there, I think, is the UConn fans. They're the kind of fans who just love to hate. Like they talk. They talk some shit, but you kind of like it and respect it. Like, if we had won three national titles the way UConn won three national titles, like especially two that were largely unexpected based on the seedings in the NCAA tournament, like the Kemba championship and then the Shabazz Napier championship, I would talk that smack every March as well. So I kind of respect the smack that they talk, but UConn fans can get under your skin too. But In a different way than, say, a Seton Hall fan can. Because at least Seton Hall, UConn, they have the rings. Like, they've got the championships.
Well, and they have some tremendous Twitter presence, I have to say. So, yes, some of their fan accounts are hysterical. Yes.
Yeah. Like, No Escalators absolutely cracks me up. No Escalators was especially hilarious during the American Athletic Conference days.
It just
absolutely hammered that conference that they were stuck in.
My favorite tweet of theirs recently was, did you see during the Marquette-Providence game when they tweeted something to the effect of Marquette has found Providence's weakness and is exploiting it. They have all their players available.
Yeah, it was something like that. And like the tweets that always crack me up is when they just absolutely hammered like Memphis and Wichita State for their academics.
Yes.
like 68 teams make the tournament. Now for you Wichita State fans, that means 64 plus four more. And that was something like it just like hammering those schools over their academics, and God, it was funny. UConn's the one. UConn's the fan base I enjoy hating. Like,
yes,
it's mostly out of a jealousy because they have those championships. That's how I kind of feel about
UConn. Well, I respect them as like basketball fans, and they're a holes, but in a lovable sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Seton Hall and to a certain extent Creighton, it's like you haven't won anything. Like, just chill. Like, all right, cool, great. You love basketball. Move on.
Maybe that's a topic to throw out to the Twitterverse. Like, rank.
Who do you hate the most in the Big East?
Yeah, you rank your most hated and most respected Big East fan bases. And boy, if that doesn't get a Twitter conversation going across the Big East Twitterverse, which fans do you hate the most? Which fans do you find most annoying? Or like give a superlatives for each Big East, like most hated, most annoying, most sarcastic, most
biggest tryhards.
Yeah, most self-loathing. That would probably be, that might be us, honestly. But
in the Wojo era, yeah, it was.
Maybe it was. But anyway,
smallest fan base, DePaul, right? Do they know they have a team?
The invisible fans, yeah, DePaul, yeah.
It's actually team most likely to give away tickets because DePaul did. They literally gave away tickets.
Yes, they did. I know all of you Marquette fans who live somewhere between Milwaukee and Chicago who buy tickets to the DePaul game every year, you are all on DePaul's mailing list.
I've already received an email for the game on the 2nd of March.
Would you be interested in DePaul season tickets while you're at it? No, I would not.
No. All right. How many Qs in Fat Chance? So, yeah. So what's your take my money for Seton Hall?
That's a good question. Thing is, if it, like, my thinking is, where I'm at is, like, I just want it to be competitive and without, like, trying to, like, predict a win necessarily. So, like, the thing is, it's probably going to be just, like, a couple point spread, so I don't want to be, like, covering the spread or something. But what would be a nice, like, benchmark to hit against Seton Hall? I'm just looking at some of their... Because, yeah, I'm going with 32 deflections against DePaul because that's usually an indication of a win. And as you said in the earlier, like, that's probably going to be a fast enough pace game that there will be a lot of possessions, a lot of back and forth. So I think you might get quite a few deflections in that game.
Well,
so,
might I suggest, and this is a little off the wall, but what if it's something like, because Seton Hall fouls a lot. What if it's like Marquette shoots 16, 18, 20 free throws or something like that? Because that's going to make a difference. Because if Seton Hall is going to foul that much, we're going to need to take those free points.
Hmm. Yeah, let's see. How many free... Yeah, see if I can bring up the game tracker. Hold on. Let's see how many free throws Marquette has attempted in recent games and see if we can get... let's see. I don't know if I can get... I guess it's going to take me forever to dial it up here on the fly. But... it'll be free throw related. Give me some time. Well, I'll post it on Twitter, but it will be something free throw related. I want to. It'll be like 2 minutes of dead air here on the podcast if I look it up and try to figure out a good number. But sometime before the Seton Hall game, I will tweet out a take my money for Seton Hall. It'll probably be. I think it will be free throw related. I just got to come up with a number that makes sense. But you know. It's been three in a row for Take My Money, for those keeping track. We're up to 7 hits on the year. It was 4 hits in non-conference play. It's been 3 in Big East play, and all 3 in the last 3 games. So the very unlikely loss in 32 deflections against Creighton, and then they hit both of the marks in the past 2 games. It was 32 deflections against Providence, and it was hold Georgetown to under 9.5 three-point makes, and Georgetown didn't come close to it. Georgetown only made 4 threes, so just... couple good games here for Take My Money. So if you are playing along, which I encourage, we're up to 7 units, whatever unit you have decided to donate per hit. It's up to 7 right now. So hopefully we hit it against DePaul easily, and then we'll come up with something for Seton Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. I just quick glance, I would recommend somewhere in the range of 22 to 24 free throws.
Okay. Maybe 23. We'll put it right in the middle there. 23.
There we go. 23.
Subject to change. But let's say 23 free throw attempts, not makes, right? Free
yes.
throw attempts.
Correct.
Free throw attempts.
Yes.
Okay. And hopefully, like 23 makes.
Right. I'm fine with that. I have no issue.
That would be awesome.
I would agree to that.
Hey, as always, we appreciate you guys listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us up on Twitter, especially with your thoughts on. Worst Big East fan bases. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. CrackSidewalks.com is where we post the podcast. Go there and you can leave your comments under the podcast postings. Also remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well, if that is your thing. Phil, have a good week. Anything else going on?
Nope. Just, staying out of the line of fire and hoping like hell we don't lose to DePaul.
Yeah. Don't lose to DePaul. Seashells and balloons, everybody.